Welcome to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. I want to thank you for joining us this week. Looking forward to a great March ahead of us, and we just got through finishing up a good month of shows. And we've kind of based our entire month of February off of kind of talking mostly about Body Awareness Week that occurred during the month of February, and it's a very important topic for college age students, and something that we spent a lot of time talking about. First week we had Holly Groff from who's the coordinator of food services, came and talked to us about some of the things that they do. We had Jeremy Henderson from Student Care and Wellbeing, Dr. BJ Gunther from the Counseling Center, who is a counselor at the Counseling Center, and also is the host of Brain Matters on that airs on Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. on 90.7 The Capstone. So great show if you haven't heard that, if you haven't caught it. That airs live, like I said, on Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. And then last week I was out, but having Whitney back last week with Sheena, and they talked with Charlotte Patonic on sleep hygiene, which is, again, one of those things that's kind of often overlooked, but very important for anyone, and has been tied very strongly with obesity and has been tied with poor sleep habits are actually linked to heart disease and early death. So one of those things that's often overlooked, but one of those things that you really need to pay attention to. So today what we're going to do, we're going to kind of make a leap today from talking about all of those things that are related to taking care of yourself as it relates to your body, body awareness, that sort of thing. And we're going to make a kind of a transition into some different topics for the month of March. But I got a great guest today that's going to be joining us. I'm honored to have my wife with us today. And she is somebody that I'm humbled to say is an expert. Is that okay?
I don't know about that.
But my wife, Alicia, who is a physical therapist and who has done a lot of work with the elderly, which is kind of one of the things that we're going to talk about today. And before you jump off the radio station, hang around, because we've got some really good things that we're going to talk about. And talking about the elderly might be something that college age students don't necessarily relate to that much, but it's something you might be surprised as we get to talking about it today that might be of interest to you. And I can tell you, we're going to talk about some things that are very important to you. So if you can hang around, we've got somebody who is, like I said, Alicia is an expert in dealing with this population. You worked in outpatient physical therapy, worked in rehab,
yeah,
and currently now do home health physical therapy, which is going where you go to the patient's house.
Correct? Right, that's correct.
So driving to, you get the best of everything, right? You have physical therapy brought to you to in your home, right?
You can still be in your PJs.
Right. Nice. Well, we're going to get into some of the specifics about that and how it plays an important role in our healthcare system. And a lot of people, it's one of those things that a lot of people don't know about, and why people, who qualifies for it and that sort of thing. So we're going to get into that and let you give us some of the specifics. But it's one of those things that, again, before you go anywhere, hang around, because it's an important topic. It's an interesting topic once we get to talking about it. And it's something that will affect everyone, regardless of how old you are right now. You're going to age. And all those decisions that you make right now are things that will affect you in a profound way as you get older. And also the potential for, affecting, for people that have elderly parents or elderly grandparents, it could play a role. And we're going to get into some of those things as we go throughout the show. But we want to thank you for joining us this afternoon, Sunday afternoon. And we're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere, and we'll be back shortly with more. You're listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And thank you once again for sharing part of your Sunday afternoon with us here. And we've got a great guest and a great topic, and we're just going to jump right into this. My wife Alicia's here to talk, who's a physical therapist, going to talk with us about a lot of the things that the elderly have to deal with as, you know, as they're growing older and the effect of obesity. One of our main topics on here is we talk about wellness a lot and how obesity affects all of those different areas of wellness, you know, from the not only the physical part, but, you know, the spiritual part of your life, the emotional part of your life, when you talk about self-esteem and things like that, things that I'm sure you probably see a lot of. And then we get into social wellness and environmental wellness and things like that. And what you do is a great example of how you can look at wellness overall and, you know, apply it to what you do. And so I want to start out talking with you about some of the things, like when you look at the quality of life of your patients. To start off with, let me back up just a second. For somebody to qualify to see you, you know, doing home health, what do they need to be? A lot of people don't understand what home health is. And you do, like you said earlier, you come into the home and do exercises with people and see what they need to do, you know, to improve on.
Right. Well, all of our patients have to be considered homebound, either temporarily or permanently homebound, which doesn't mean they can't go anywhere. They can go to the doctor, get your haircut, go to church, things like that. But our patients have to be referred by a physician. And the one thing they all have in common is they usually have either had some type of decline in their mobility, or they have had a surgery or an illness that has caused them to lose some of their independence. Right. And so that's where we come in, if the doctor refers them and provide services to help them to regain some of that independence. Right. And in turn, sometimes help people to where they're no longer homebound. And then others, we just help to teach them and their family members or caregivers how to help them to continue to be as independent as possible.
So would you say that, like, the goal in most instances, if you haven't seen a patient and you're getting ready to go into their house, you've never seen them before, not knowing anything about them other than just what you've kind of read in their chart about them, is the goal, generally speaking, for them to be independent at the end of, I mean, not all other things, taking all other things out of the window, you know, kind of putting those to the side, is the goal to get them to where they're on their own and able to be functionally independent?
Well, that would be a great goal for all of our patients, but unfortunately some of them are not able to return to complete independence, so we might help them to try to get back to what we call modified independence, meaning we may help them to get devices to help them walk or equipment to help them be able to get into the shower and sit on a bench to take a bath rather than being able to stand, because they may not be able to tolerate standing. We also offer other services with home health, with nursing and occupational therapy and home health aid to help people to regain independence and just their activities of daily living, because as we age, sometimes we lose the ability just to be able to bathe ourselves or dress ourselves or, you know, fix our meals. And so we help them to be able to become as independent as possible or modified independently. Or if that we're not able to help them to be independent for whatever reason, then that's where caregivers or family members come into place, and we teach them how to care for them.
Right. That's a good point. I mean, it's hard to get back to being independent when you weren't necessarily independent before the incident.
Some are not. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, what would you say, generally speaking, I know you can't be like super specific, but what would you say that your average patient looks like? I mean, generally speaking, you work with the elderly, correct? I mean, it's safe to say.
Well,
some people might
not want you to consider them elderly, because we do have patients, you know, who have a total knee replacement or a total hip replacement who might be in their 60s, you know, or early 60s. And we even have some that are younger than that. But a lot of our patients are, you know, I guess considered elderly and above 65. And Right. And so, generally speaking, that would be the age group that
the
we
population
would see.
That
yes.
you see.
Mm-hmm.
But you do occasionally see like younger patients, and mm-hmm. for whatever reason, they're homebound.
Right.
And,
if they're homebound, then we can see them.
Yes, mm-hmm. age isn't necessarily a factor in whether or not you can see
right.
a patient. It's more
right.
the homebound. That's interesting. Would you say that there, since you mentioned, being independent, would you say that there's a big relationship between being independent and being and say mental health, you know, being strong, having, you know, good self-confidence, good self-esteem and things like that, or things like happiness, the more from beginning to see a patient to the last visit that you have with a patient, do you generally see an improvement in not only just the physical things, but what are some of the other things that you see an improvement in?
Well, we definitely see a correlation in that, because, you know, depression is a big factor in a lot of patients who are not able to care for themselves or to just get out of the house, because it's hard to lose that level of independence when you're used to being independent and being able to do things for yourself. So as we help them to progress, we do see a change sometimes in their, you know, their mental attitude and outlook on life, and sometimes just getting them to where they can walk outside and look at their flowers or go to their mailbox by themselves to get their mail, or you know, just little things like that that don't mean a lot to a lot of us because it just seems second nature and
right.
no problems to them is a big deal and helps them a lot mentally. So
One of the things that we've talked a lot about on here is quality. Well, we've discussed a little bit on here, but it is I think a super important factor, especially regardless of age, quality of life. You know, if you're a college student now, you're thinking, well, this doesn't matter to me. You know, it's going to be a long time before I get that old. Well, hold on, put the brakes on for just a second. Let's stop. You've got parents, you've got grandparents probably, and there's a potential for you to have to help them at some point. And you probably see that a lot. And that's something we'll get into in just a little bit. But, you know, going back to, you know, all of the decisions that you make now as a college age student, the habits that you set for the next 10, 20, 30 years of your life are going to impact your quality of life. And when we look at quality of life, kind of need to differentiate between those two things, quality of life versus quantity of life. Quantity of life being your lifespan, what's your average expected lifespan. And the goal, I would say for most people, I'd say the goal should be for anybody, is for your lifespan to be roughly equal to what your quality of life is, because you don't want to end up spending the last 10 or 20, even 30 years of your life not having the quality of life that you're used to. And you probably see that a lot, with quality of life declining.
Right, right. And I think that's why it's important for college students, as they're, you know, deciding what they're going to do with their lives and their careers, and just to learn to, you know, put back money for savings. And when you do get a job, put that money in retirement to, you know, prepare for the future, because we see a lot of patients who maybe weren't able to or did not do that, and you're Medicare and insurances will only cover so much. I mean, even
right.
our services are temporary, so we have to make sure our patients either are able to care for themselves or have a caregiver, and sometimes that entails paying for a caregiver
right.
because your insurance is not going to pay for someone to come to your home to take care of you all the time. So it's just good to be prepared, you know, in those aspects. And then when you're thinking of, you know, building a home or anything like that, just looking at those type of things. I was telling you the other day that, you know, we have so many people that have two-story houses and their bedrooms on the
right
on the top floor. So
right.
you don't think about those things until, you know, you do something like
right.
I do.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, lots of things to think about and get into. And, I want to ask you some questions about that. We got to take a
okay.
quick break, but we'll get into those in just a little bit. We're going to take a break right now and be back shortly. You're listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we're here this afternoon talking to, with Alicia Jackson, my favorite physical therapist. Easy to say. That you ever been called that before? My favorite physical therapist. But we're talking about obesity and quality of life and how that relates to people as they age. And you were talking about some very interesting things before the break, and I know so many things that we could go into, but I do want to, you know, keep on with that, those types of questions, you know, for you, because it's one of those things that's so interesting to me, you know, as when we talk about people's quality of life and it, you know, it declining as they age, and the goal being to be to have the best quality of life as possible. You see such a variety of patients, I'm sure, traveling all over West Alabama. You know, when you look at like what the quality of life people expect, do you see a big range in what the people's expectations are for their quality of life? Because I know, like for for me and you, we might not necessarily have the same expectations for our quality of life. You know, a good quality of life for me might be just being independent and not doing anything with the last 20 years of my life. Whereas for you, it might be being as active as possible and, you know, going to the movies and, you know, being able to do anything that you want like that. Do you see a big range of what the expectations are in your patients?
Well, we actually do. You know, we have a lot of patients who do want to be completely independent, get back to driving, that kind of thing, if they were independent before. Then we see a lot of patients who maybe have been deconditioned for a while, and their goal is just to be able to get up and make it to the bathroom and make it to the kitchen, you know, and that kind of thing. So you see their expectations somewhat decreasing, you know, based on what they've been able to do over the last few years. And in a way, you know, it is kind of sad because you know deep down inside that they want to be independent, but they've kind of resigned to the fact that this is, you know, this may be about what I'm going to be able to do, and I've got to just do the best with what I can. But that's why it's so important, I think, to try to, you know, have an active lifestyle, you know, in general, before you get to age 85, you know.
Right.
You want to try to be as active as possible and get in a good routine of exercising and taking good care of yourself and eating right, so that you are more healthy if you ever do have to have a knee replacement or a hip replacement or heart surgery or anything, any type of procedure.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you adjust your goals for that patient? When you see a patient and you know that you guys are going to see them for a certain amount of time, a set period, do the goals that you set for that patient, do they usually, I know you probably try to match them up with what their expectations are, but when you write your goals, do you try to kind of push them past what their expectations might be, or is that setting the bar too high, or how do you go about that? What's your thought process when you're writing the goals for somebody?
Well, it kind of depends on, you know, each patient. Obviously, it'll be patient specific. If we have someone who's willing and we know that they can do more than what they're doing, and we feel like once we get them to that point, they may change their expectations and think, oh yeah, I can do this. Because we have had patients before who were not walking, but it was because of fear. Mm-hmm. And after we worked with them and encouraged them and finally got them to where they felt comfortable trying it with their family, then they were able to return to being able to walk in their home, you know. Whereas we have other patients who, they'll just tell you, I'm not going to do this, this, and this, and you just have to do the best that you can to get them, you know, to so do they, what they will. So
they adjust their goals.
Yeah, they adjust their own goals. But and, of course, we can't make them do it when we're not there. So that's a big thing, is the follow through. I mean, we can teach them, show them what to do, how to do it safely, and then the rest is up to them to keep doing it.
Right. That's one of the things that we deal with in personal training and what we do on the healthy side of the equation a lot, is one of the things that we see and we have to deal with a lot is our personal training clients come to us and they're with us a limited amount of time, two, maybe three times a week, and for an hour. And we can design the best workout program for them, period. I mean, nobody can find a better workout program for them. And they might follow it. We might push them, you know, past their limits for those 2 to 3 sessions. But, you know, those other days during the week, you know, the expectation is they would do some things. And we can lay those things out there for them. But if they don't do it and they're not having an active lifestyle during those days, we don't get the results that we want to see.
Right.
And do you see that? Is that a common issue for you guys? Just compliance on days that you're not seeing patients?
Oh yeah, it's a big issue. I find it's funny because sometimes I'll come in and to see a patient, and we've recommended that they use their cane or walker all the time because then maybe they've had some falls and they'll be in their chair, and I'll say, well, have you been using your walker? And they're like, oh yeah, I use it every time I walk. And I'll say, well, how did you get in here from the bed? and I'm like, where's your walker? And they're like, oh yeah, I left it in the bedroom. So, you know, they've been walking without the walker. And
right.
Or you'll say, can you show me some of your exercises? Have you been doing them? And they're like, oh yeah, I'm doing them every day. I say, well, show me some of them. Let me see how well you know them.
Right.
And then after, you know, 30 seconds of nothing,
you realize
they're like, you're going to have to show me. I don't remember them, you know. So it's kind of an issue.
Let me ask you this then. What are some things are there any things that you can do to increase compliance on the days that you're not seeing those patients, or are you just out of luck? If they don't have that desire to do the things on their own on their days, are you just out of luck?
Well, if they have a caregiver that's encouraging, or a family member, or they live in a facility where maybe some of the staff will encourage them to do it, that helps. Sometimes just, you know, trying to get them in a routine, maybe with a chart, an exercise chart where they can check it off that
right.
They've done it each day. And then just giving them options, because sometimes people have difficulty following through with a program when they feel like they've got to go take 30 minutes and sit down and do all of these exercises all at one time. Sometimes with our patients, we will say, you know, as long as you're doing them, that's better than not doing them at all.
Right.
So do two of them. When you go in the kitchen to get you a glass of water, maybe if we have them doing some standing exercises at the sink, do a few, you know, of your exercises while you're in there, and then come back. When your TV show goes off, get up and walk down the hall with your walker. You know, while you're watching TV, do some of these leg exercises. So we try to give them ways to incorporate it throughout their day.
Right.
Rather than feeling like it's something that they've just got to stop everything to do all at one time.
It's interesting the way you talk about those, because there's so many correlations between what you do with, you know, your patients and what we do with the things that we try to do to get our healthy clients to incorporate physical activity in their, you know, regular daily life. Real quick before we go to break, would you say that you can tell based on, you know, attitude and those internal things when you go see a patient whether or not they're going to be successful based on compliance, based, you know, if you just from talking to them and their attitude and that sort of thing?
Oh yeah, usually we can tell the ones who are going to be compliant because they're real eager to learn, and they ask questions, and of course they demonstrate what they've done when we come. This is what I've been doing, and they'll show me and ask, is this right, you know, or what else can I do, or how often should I do it? They just seem more interested. And a lot of our patients, we can tell if they were on a regular routine of exercise before.
They're familiar with it.
Mm-hmm, because they're more apt to do what we want them to do.
Right. I bet you're probably able to delineate which patients were more active prior to. Good deal. Do you have time to stay with us for this next segment before we?
Sure.
Okay, good deal. We're going to take a quick break, and don't go anywhere. We'll be back shortly with more. You're listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. Welcome back to 50 Feet Tile with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we're here today talking with Alicia Jackson, a physical therapist who does home health physical therapy for the most part. I know you do some other things too. And we were just talking before the break about your patient success rate and, you know, how likely they are to be successful based on their internal motivation is basically what more or less what it boils down to. I was reading a little bit before we came in here. I had somebody email me Ruth Bader Ginsburg's workout. Supreme Court Justice, don't know if she's 84 years old. And, okay, stop me right there, but 84 years old and working out, that's a positive good. Right there from the start, right? Mm-hmm. She didn't, you know, not being forced to work out, but working out on her own. She does a workout that was designed by an Army Reserve sergeant, and she works out a couple times a week. And her workout is about 90 minutes long. And it's pretty interesting. I jotted some things down that I thought were just kind of blew me away, you know, for her to be 84 years old. And I know you're used to working with this age population. It's a little bit outside of what I do on a regular basis. But she does, like I said, roughly a 90-minute workout. She starts out with 5 minutes on the elliptical to warm up, and then she does a few stretches. And she goes into a series of strength training exercises, which I'm sure you do with your patients. And she does, you know, total body workout a couple times a week. But here, let me just give you some of the things that she does, okay? She does 3 sets of 10 to 13 reps, okay? I stay away from that number 13 because of the bad luck thing, but I'd say 10 to 12, 13 reps is what she does. She does one-legged squats. She's 84 years old now. One-legged squats.
That's really good.
That's impressive. She does push-ups, okay? Not push-ups against the wall. It says she started out doing push-ups against the wall because she couldn't do them. Then she progressed to a modified push-up on her knees, and now she does regular push-ups, 10 to 13 per set. It's impressive.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. She does medicine ball tosses from a seated to a standing position.
That's pretty good.
She does 30-second planks, and this is what got me. She does, for those of you that don't know, a BOSU ball is like the it's like a half of a ball on a flat mounted on a flat background, and she does squats on an upside down BOSU ball.
Oh wow,
that's pretty cool, right?
That is good.
You don't do that with any of your patients?
No, we have a foam cushion we use, but I haven't put anybody on a BOSU ball.
But you do, balance things like that. Mm-hmm. Would you be hesitant to have an 84-year-old doing squats on an upside-down BOSU ball while you're not there?
I probably wouldn't be able to talk very many of them into it.
Yeah, that would probably hurt your insurance, too, wouldn't it? Yeah. Your ability to work. To me, that just blew me away, though. That's pretty cool, some of the things that she does. Let me ask you this. Have you seen some patients that it kind of blows you away, their ability, some of the things that they're able to do, or are you generally speaking, do you get what you expect with most people?
No, I've seen some patients before. Actually, my oldest patient that I ever saw was 107, and if she had not been in a car accident, she would not have been a patient because she broke her arm. But she she was very active, and that's what she basically said, that all of her life she had just stayed moving and stayed active, and she didn't necessarily do a exercise routine, but she walked every day, she worked in her garden, and then as she got older, she did start doing, you know, just range of motion exercises and stretching and stuff to stay flexible.
Right.
And you could really tell that she...
Wow.
That she had done that all
that's
of her
impressive.
Life.
That's impressive. 107 years old.
Right.
Wow,
yep.
That's cool. Well, let me get down. We've got a few minutes here. I want to just hit right home with a couple questions for you. First thing I want to ask you is, when you look at obesity level in patients, that's one of the things that, you know, I've looked at a lot is body composition in our clients and dealing with that. Would you say that there's a relationship between obesity and your likelihood to get somebody as a patient, or their success rate as you're seeing them, is obesity, would you say that's a predictor of how successful they might be with their exercise program with you?
Well, obesity, it does affect it because it, you know, of course, puts more stress on your joints. It limits the movements and activities that we can do sometimes, especially if, say, they're recovering from a knee surgery or a hip surgery or something like that. And so you have one injured leg and then you have the obesity factor in there. So it makes it difficult for them to do some of the things we might would want them to do. So we do have to modify the plan sometimes.
Right.
And the exercises, do modified exercises.
Well, keeping them remembering for our listening audience, you go into the home, so you don't have mm-hmm. the access to, you know, workout machines. You're only limited to what you can take into a patient's home.
Right.
So in turn, you're limited in to your imagination with what exercises you mm-hmm. can do. And I know with, you know, having talked to you, you know, some of the things you do is you are creative with some of the things you do, but when you're limited by your environment,
right,
with being in their home, and then they're further limited by their obesity level, that kind of narrows down what you can do with those patients. So that probably when you factor all of those things in there, the more limited you are in what you can do, the less likely probably that they're going to get, the less likely the results that they're going to get are going to be really out there, really good.
Yeah, I mean, they can still progress. Obviously, right. They can still progress. It may just take them a little longer than someone else if they are willing to put in the work and they're diligent and, you know, compliant with their exercise program and what we ask them to do.
Right.
Then they can still progress and recover, but it may just take a little bit longer. Now, if they're, you know, not compliant, they're not right. doing the things except for when we come to see them, then yes, they usually don't progress quite as well as
right.
they would.
Would you say that obesity is a big factor in predicting whether or not you're going to get a patient? I mean, does it? Would you say? Let me preface that by saying, when you come into a patient's home,
mm-hmm.
One of the things that we do, we have access to being able to assess their body composition, our clients.
Right.
A little different for you. You know, mm-hmm. you can't take them in and underwater weigh them or put them in a bipod. What do you do in terms of assessment for, you know, looking at their obesity level with the patients that you see?
Well, we do, you know, weigh our patients, and we can keep an eye on that and monitor that each week or even each day, just depending on how often that we're seeing them. We could do a BMI, you know, if we wanted to. We traditionally just, you know, do weight. It can be a little bit of a touchy subject, you know, to
right.
approach with patients, so we have to kind of weigh those options to see if they, no pun intended, weigh those options to see if they're going to be willing to talk about that. And, you know, those who are, we, you know, offer, you know, nutrition counseling and, you know, nursing may get involved, occupational therapy may, you know, all the services combined, social work, if they're having
right.
difficulty getting meals or things like that, and maybe they're choosing the wrong foods to eat. You know, we can look at those kind of things to
wow.
to help them overall, not
right.
just recovering from whatever it is that they had done, but to look at their overall health.
Right.
And
do you ever use weight as a goal or anything related to body composition assessment?
We could, if we're seeing them long enough, if it's, you know, a little bit of a longer-term patient. But a lot of our patients, we are seeing such a short amount of time.
Right.
And, you know, then we may not have time to follow through with seeing, you know, weight loss.
Right. Okay. Well, good deal. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back and wrap this up, finish talking about a couple more questions for you before we go. We're going to take this break real quick, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Fit to Be Tie with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. You're listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone, and we're back with Alicia Jackson, a physical therapist, to been talking about some of the types of patients that she sees in home health physical therapy, and lots of good information. Appreciate you coming on and doing this for us, because a lot of people that haven't been forced into this situation aren't aware of it. So one thing I want to ask you is, you know, our audience is predominantly college students, and you know, most people that are younger that haven't been subjected to, you know, being limited in what they can do, don't think about this sort of thing. So when you look at college age students, you know, it's one thing to be healthy themselves, but they need to be able to think about this in terms of their parents and their grandparents and things like that. A lot of times, do you see, you know, younger people as the primary caregiver for the patients that you see?
Oh, yes, all the time. We see children and grandchildren having to take care of their parents and grandparents.
What can somebody do to prepare themselves to be the primary caregiver for an elderly patient?
Well, I mean, like we talked about before, you know, being financially responsible, to maybe put themselves in a position to help if they need to help, to hire caregivers or anything like that, because you just never know when you might have to become the caregiver, and it's something that's hard to prepare for, I would imagine, because you may be in school still, or you may be living in a different state. It's also important to know what your options are, like with having home health, or, you know, services, or sitter services, or assisted living facilities, just kind of knowing what's out there to help you if you had to.
Right.
Utilize those.
But so many people aren't prepared for that, and that mm-hmm. role is kind of forced on them. And, you know, but as a college student, you're in that frame of mind that you're in a learning environment. So, you know, learning about, would you say it's important, you know, learning about the options that are available to you? And
oh, yes. And then just, you know, just learning about, you know, I'm sure there are even classes you can take, but that teach you how to take care of someone. Just being involved, if you have a loved one that goes in the hospital, observing, you know, what the nurses do, what the assistants do, the people that are helping them, and asking questions. You know, that's the best way to learn, is just asking questions of the doctor and of other caregivers, or, you know, medical workers, to find out what it is that you need to be doing and what's best for them.
Do you come across neglect in some situations where there isn't a primary caregiver this wanting to or willing to, it's just kind of forced on them, and you can tell that they don't want to do it?
Yeah, unfortunately, there are those times where you are in a home situation and you realize that the patient is not getting the care that they need, and sometimes it's because there's not one available and the patient's trying to make it on their own without it, or maybe the caregivers are not doing what they what they're expected to do. So, of course, there are services for that can come in and
as
help.
Well,
but,
right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Lots of good information. Thank you for being here with us today. I know you're busy and have lots going on, and I appreciate you stopping
you're
by
welcome.
To do this. Again, so lots of good information and things that you probably don't think about, you know, as a college student, but things that are important as you age. So again, thanks. We appreciate you doing
You're
this
welcome.
For us. And Sheena not with us today. She's out. She's actually over the Governor's Task Force on Obesity, which is meeting today. Talking about obesity and how big it is and how pervasive it is in our lives. It really does play a big role. Lots of fun things going on campus this week. Baseball at home this weekend. Softball at home this weekend. We've got tennis is at home this weekend, men's tennis, women on the road at Mississippi State, and gymnastics kicking off with Georgia at about 1 this afternoon. So lots going on. So hope you enjoy your weekend. Thanks for spending part of your Sunday afternoon with us. We hope that you picked up a little useful info. We're going to take a little longer break this time, 167 hours to be exact. Have a good week and join us next Sunday afternoon for Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Gap Stone.